Hello, I'm Kirsty Young. Thank you for downloading this podcast of Desert Island Discs from BBC Radio 4. For rights reasons, the music choices are shorter than in the radio broadcast. For more information about the programme, please visit bbc.co.uk/radio4. My castaway this week is Vidal Sassoon. He calls himself an old hairdresser, which is a bit like saying Picasso knocked out the odd painting. An iconic figure, he is the father of modern crimping, making his mark in the 60s when he became the king of the five-point cut. His scissors and ambition lifted him out of the grinding poverty of his childhood. He spent 6 years in an orphanage and elevated him to the very pinnacle of glamour and international recognition. He says, "I've met prime ministers and Hollywood directors, screen legends and football superstars. I have cut the hair and listened to the secrets of some of the most beautiful women in the world." Why is that, Vidal Sassoon? Why do we tell our hairdressers our secrets?
Because after the shampoo, if it's a good massage, you're totally relaxed. And some people verbalise it,
yes,
that relaxation. Others, of course, stay very quiet.
You gave Mary Quant, of course, really the perfect bob. Mary, yeah, Quant's bob was as famous as Mary Quant's miniskirts. I mean, when you did that to her, did she know that almost it would... She's still wearing it today.
Yes.
It is her signature, really.
Yes.
Did you have to persuade her to get it in the beginning?
Well, she came in 1957 with Alexander Plunkett Green. You know, that was her husband.
Yeah.
Charmer. I did something I'd never done in my life before. As I was dancing around the chair, I nipped her ear.
Oh, with your scissors? Just,
yes.
Ooh.
And the blood came down. And Alexander looked at me and said, "You charge extra for that." Mary just giggled, finished the haircut. This was 1957. And then she said, "Let's work together." And we've worked together since that day. It was one of those lovely days.
And at that time when things really caught fire for you, we will talk about all the hard work that got you there, but did you just feel like a man working hard, or did you feel excited by being on the crest of a wave?
I had the most marvellous time. I really did, and I was comforted and excited by being able to work with people like David Hicks, people I never ever thought I'd meet in my life, and suddenly I'm working with them.
Did you live in an apartment that was designed by David Hicks at one point?
Yes, David actually came in and did the interior, yes.
Tell me what it was like.
Well, it was just two rooms. Just off Curzon Street is Curzon Place. Gorgeous Georgian house. The first and second floors had very high ceilings. Then you got to the third floor, which is a bit dodgy. Then you got to my floor, which was the servants' quarters. Okay, on the fourth floor. David came up and said, "Yes, I'll do this for you." And he brought Francis Bacon round once. And Francis said, "For two rooms, you've done a marvellous job, David. But why have you covered all the books in white paper?" And David said, "If you saw his taste in literature, you would have done the same." Which wasn't true. I was reading Camus and Dostoevsky. You know, I was always trying to improve myself because I knew I had a long way to go. I started with nothing, in a sense, from the point of view of education. The thing that I had was vision. And that was vision in my own craft.
We will come right back to that in just a second. For now, it's time for some music, though. The first track, Vidal Sassoon, that we're going to hear today.
The first track was What a Difference a Day Made?
By Dinah Washington. Why have you chosen this?
I met my wife, Ronnie, 22 years ago in Cincinnati, where she's from. And what a difference a day made.
What a difference a day made. 24 little hours brought the sun and the flowers.
That was Dinah Washington and What a Difference a Day Made. And you said, Vidal Sassoon, going into that, you were talking about your life there in the 60s and saying that you were preparing yourself because you knew you had a long way to go. And I want to just take you back then to the very beginning. The beginning was 1928. You were born in Shepherd's Bush. Uh-huh. And of your very early years, do you have much memory at all of the
yes.
early days?
Oh, very much so.
Tell me what you remember.
Well, my mother was going to be evicted because she didn't have the rent money. And father had taken off, a bit of a playboy. He just left my brother and myself and my mother. And an uncle took us over to Aunt Katie in the East End.
Right.
She lived in a tenement building on Petticoat Lane, actually, Wentworth Street.
Right.
It's been pulled down now. Should have been pulled down about 50 years ago, but it's now down.
And your father, you say your father took off. You also once said that your father spoke seven languages and that he had sex in all of them.
Yes.
Yes, he
no
was.
No question.
Right, okay. How did you. So your mother coped with this by turfing him out then?
Well, he just left.
He left.
Mother had great style. She was. She and Katie, my auntie Katie, stayed in one room, and the five children, because Katie had three, her husband had died, and we were on mattresses in the other room. And when my mother went to the Jewish authorities and said, the girls are getting big, there's Katie's girls, I'd like to put Vidal in the orphanage, is that okay? Well, eventually, yes, they got me in, and a year and a half later, my brother... Mm-hmm. But
So how old would you have been when you went into the orphanage?
Five.
Right, you can remember that then.
Yeah. Oh, very much, absolutely. And I also remember any time they tried to look for me, I was in this hot bath. It's the first house I'd ever lived in that had a bath.
Right.
It was quite wonderful.
But it didn't have your mum. I'm imagining at five you probably missed your mum.
Oh, very much so. Yeah, I had enormous... respect, not only respect for her, but rapport. We got on so well.
How often did you see your mother in that period that you were in the...
They allowed her to come once a month. They felt that if a weekly visit would make it very awkward for everybody. It was a monthly visit.
Right, so you were in the orphanage for 6 years. So, you obviously had time to think about what had happened and why that happened. Did you talk to your mum about it when she came to visit?
On occasion, yeah. And she told me the truth. She wasn't too thrilled with my father, so she told me the truth.
Right.
And I understood, actually.
Did she tell you were coming out, or did you think that was always the way it was going to be?
Oh, no. The Germany invaded Poland on September the 1st, 1939. And by the 3rd, France and Britain had declared war on Germany. And that day, literally that day... all the kids were taken to the country, to a place called Holt in Wiltshire.
Yeah.
A small village, 1,000 people. Far more sheep and cows than people.
What did you make of that? I mean, what a change.
Nice family by the name of Lucas, who took us in. And it was quite pleasant.
We will come right back to that in just a second, Vidal Sassoon. For now, it's time for some music, though. At the second disc that we're going to hear.
That's Billy Eckstein. Now, Billy Eckstein was the black Frank Sinatra. I must have been about 16, and we used to go down Petticoat Lane, and it was the first record I ever bought.
Everything I had is yours. You're a part of me. Everything I have is yours, my destiny.
That was Billy Eckstein with the Sonny Burke Orchestra and Everything I Have is Yours. So, Vidal Sassoon, when you were in the orphanage, I read that you ran away once and you ran away to your dad's house.
That's right.
Right. Is that right?
Well, I didn't know where my mother was. She wasn't with Katie anymore.
Okay.
She'd moved. I had no idea where she was. But Shepherd's Bush, I knew. And my Aunt Polly was there, called my father, who literally took me back to the orphanage. very cold. And I decided there and then I didn't love him. Simple as that.
Did you ever see him again?
Maybe he came once or twice, but out of guilt. But no, not really.
To think about formative experiences, I can't think of one that would be much more formative than spending your time in an orphanage and seeing your mother, you know, once a month. What character do you think it formed in you?
I don't regret the experience. I think it strengthened me. I really do. We came back and we slept in shelters. Mm. Obviously, they were the Luftwaffe were bombing every night. And I got a job on a bicycle carrying messages from the city to the docks. And it was pretty gruesome because at that time of the morning they were taking the bodies out from the night before. So we saw some pretty ugly sights. But, you know, when you're 14, everything's an adventure in a
yeah.
way.
And you feel indestructible, really.
Exactly. Yeah. It's never going to be you. It's always somebody else. Mm. And Mother heard about it. And that stern look came into her face, the eyes, the whole thing. And she said, "I've had a premonition. You're going to be a hairdresser."
To be continued, to be continued, Vidal Sassoon. For now, we're going to have some music, though. Let's fit that in. Tell me about your third track today. Tell me what it is.
Oh, I took Ronnie to see Bruckner's Ninth, but Pinker Zuckerman was playing that beautiful violin of his, and we listened, and then he walked into where we were, having some refreshment, you know, and I said, "Oh, let me introduce you," because I'd met him before. He came straight over to the table and gave Ronnie the biggest hug. He played Cincinnati so many times, and she'd been to parties with him.
Oh.
So I felt like an absolute idiot. But Bruckner, I've always liked. I said to Pinkus, "I guess he's the working man's Marlon. I got a severe dressing down." "Oh, no." And he started giving me a lecture on Bruckner. So that's why it's there.
That was part of the first movement of Bruckner's Ninth Symphony with the London Symphony Orchestra conducted by Sir Colin Davis. So, Vidal Sassoon, your mother did remarry and you were brought up in a family.
Oh, yes.
You were brought up by your stepfather.
Marvellous man. Nathan Goldberg. Nathan G, we called him.
Nathan G. Tell me about him.
Fascinating guy. I don't think he ever earned more than £25 a week in his life. He was a machinist. He'd take us to a movie on a Saturday afternoon and then next door was a bookshop, and he'd make us go in and feel the books and say, "One day you'll be reading these." That's the kind of man he was.
Did he ever say, you know, you're a smart young boy, Vidal, maybe you could get to college?
My brother was always first, second. In those days they used to mark them first, second, third and what have you. I was usually 28th. I was very naughty. Once I came in 8th.
But this is interesting to me because, you know, you have an appetite. I mean, you've mentioned not just your love of music so far, but literature and the books you had on the bookshelf.
But this was all later.
So you had quite a late flowering in terms of...
Oh, yes. Yeah. I mean, anything I really wasn't interested in,
right.
I didn't study. And I remember a teacher saying to me one day, when I came 8th, Sassoon, I see you have gaps between bouts of ignorance.
So you left school at 14 and Mother says, "I had a dream last night. It's a dream you're going to be a hairdresser." And you think what?
It's a question of running away from home.
Really?
Well, the idea of being a ladies' hairdresser, yes, at the time. My mother took me into the salon, met Adolf Cohen. Adolf Cohen was the sort of the Raymond of the East End. And he said, of course, you know, there's a 100 guinea fee because there's a lot of teaching to do, a 2-year apprenticeship. My mother said, we don't have 100 buttons. He said, well, I'm afraid I can't take you. And then I must have seen a bad B-movie the day before because I opened the door for my mother, ushered her out, doffed my cap to the boss. He followed us out and said, you seem to have good manners, young man. Start Monday and forget the fee. And he looked at my mother when he said that. And her face glowed. You know, mine went very sad.
Yes. Right. And so when you were working there, first of all, you didn't fall in love with it?
There was no artistry in me that came out. I was just an average apprentice and did what everybody else did. I didn't have any ideas. Hair didn't mean a thing to me at the time.
Right. You know. And when did you actually get to start to cut here? How old were you?
That's another story. Well, Adolf Cohen, that is, said, go down to Rowton House and find yourself a model. It's about time you did your first haircut. And I went down to Rowton House, which was the place where people out of luck or having problems, emotional problems, stayed. And this enormous guy came out. His name was O'Shaughnessy, a professor, Professor O'Shaughnessy. And he came for a year. And can you imagine a 14-year-old kid learning about all those marvellous Irish writers? You know, it was just an extraordinary experience. He was a wonderful influence. He actually got me interested in the theatre.
Let's have some music then, Vidal. We have to fit in 8 discs, so it's time to go to disc number 4. Tell me about this. Why have you chosen this?
Aznavour sings What Makes a Man a Man, and this is to honour all the people I've worked with, homosexual or straight, as they like to call them, and all the talent that came out of both groups. They've been a joy. So this is to honour them, and it's Aznavour.
My mum and I will live alone. A grand apartment is our home. In a fair home towers, I have to keep me company. 2 cats, a dog, a parakeet, some plants and flowers. I help my mother with the chores. I wash, she dries, I do the floors. We work together.
That was Charles Aznavour and What Makes a Man. There can't, Vidal Sassoon, be many hairdressers who've brawled in the streets with fascists. Tell me how that came about for you.
Well, at 17, I think it was. Mosley was let out of, he was house arrest. But many of his thugs were let out of prison just after the war. And they started marching around the streets of London. We've got to get rid of the Yids and all that kind of nonsense, you know. After the Holocaust, no one was going to put up with it. You know, never again was the theme, never again.
But what, I mean, did you ever, you know, fighting in the streets, did you ever get a thick lip or a black eye? Did you ever have to go into the salon with an...
Yes, I had a big bruise here. Fortunately, the guy was only wearing a ring and not a knuckle duster.
Right.
And we used to set with rollers and hairpins in those days, you know. And the client said to me, good God, Vidal, you look awful. What happened? I said, oh, nothing. I just tripped over a hairpin.
And you served in the Israeli army, didn't you?
It was a year.
Yeah, a year of very punishing physical work, was it? I mean,
They trained. I've never been so well trained. It was just incredible the way they trained us. And, we saw some sites. We knew we had to. There were only 600,000 Jews at the time, surrounded by 1 million Arab people. And I'm not suggesting they didn't have a cause, they did. But we needed a country so badly.
Do you think, Vidal Sassoon, you are, and it's not an industry where I think this could be said of many people, you're a tough nut. You know, you're physically hardy. You seem to me emotionally very resilient, the way you talk about your time. And, you know, there could be many young men who would be broken by being in an orphanage for 6 years, or who would go into the army and think after 3 weeks, what the hell am I doing here? You seem only really to have built on those experiences rather than let them undermine you.
Yes, I said at the beginning, I think it strengthened me. All the experiences that I had gave me strength rather than pulled me down.
It took quite a long time, didn't it, for you to sort of find your feet, find that it was the right thing for you to do. I mean, you spent a long time sort of slogging at your craft and working.
Yes.
Yeah.
It was 1954. I had a 700-foot salon in Bond Street, the Oxford Street end, you know. And the first day there were 3 clients, and the first month we couldn't pay our expenses, you know. And eventually, after 3 months, it picked up.
Before you opened your own salon, when did you take the elocution lessons?
Oh, God, in my 20s.
Right.
In my 20s, yes. I went to Iris Warren. I went up. She said, enunciate. And there were some words for me to read. I enunciated. And she said, my God, it's bloody awful. But I think I can do something with you.
That exhibits a particular sort of determination. You know, certainly during the 60s, that's when it became quite cool to be, you know, a bit of a boy, talk like that, having, you know, it was the time of Michael Caine and Terry Stamp and all those people.
Yes.
Who actually, part of the appeal was that they were rough around the edges.
Yes, and they both stayed at my flat when I was in New York.
Both of them? Michael Caine and Terry
Both
Stamp.
Of them.
At the same time?
At the same time. The best friends were never the same.
Yes, probably best you were out of town. Did you ever hit the town with those boys?
We were close friends when we were very young.
Right.
I don't see them very much anymore.
But when you were out on the town, what sort of... Can you tell me what you got up to?
I would just say girls, girls, girls.
I've got it. Tell me what we're going to hear next. We're on disc number 5.
Oh, it's Kiri Te Kanawa.
Yes, and tell me why you've chosen this.
Because I met her on a TV show, and I thought, this is the most gracious, charming lady I'd ever met. That was the only time I met her. And I thought, it'd be nice to have her on, as I love her voice anyway.
Was Kiri Te Kanawa singing part of Un Bel Di, One Beautiful Day, from Puccini's Madame Butterfly with the National Opera Orchestra of Lyon, conducted by Kent Nagano. So, Vidal Sassoon, you have been with your wife, Ronnie, married for nearly 20 years.
Yes,
now.
22 years altogether.
22 years altogether. Are you one of these people, I ask this because Ronnie is your fourth wife, are you one
yes.
of those people who likes company, needs to be married?
Well, I was so ambitious that I ruined so many marriages. They never saw me. I was either out doing shows, training, creating a team, because I felt we could do something very special in the craft, and neglected marriages. And I guess I learned my lesson with Ronnie.
And was it fortunate then that you met her at the point of in your life that you did, when the business stuff was being handled by other people?
Yes, no okay. question. I was 62... running around the world doing shows with the artistic team. And Ronnie was in her late 30s, which I thought was perfect.
Did she think it was perfect? Was she worried about the age gap?
She's never been anywhere near that subject. She never really has. You know, after those first few years of wild sex, then there's a fascination creeps in. And if you can hold that and have it with a partner, I think you've got something good going.
You're very honest about saying that, you know, probably the collapse of other marriages was down to the fact that you were so focused and obsessed on work. If you were a neglectful husband at times, were you? What sort of father were you?
Oh, that was different. Every weekend or whenever I could, I was with the kids, taking them to whatever, and enjoying their company. They were a great bunch of kids.
And one of your kids, David, growing up now, of course, was adopted. Did that come out of your own experience as a youngster in the orphanage?
Yes, it did.
Did it?
David came out of that experience, yeah.
Right.
And he needed some care and attention. But he's a man now and doing what he does and quite happy.
And when you were swept up by Hollywood and swept into this very glamorous life, do you wonder, and I'm now thinking about your children, of course, the children of the Hollywood elite often do not lead happy lives. Did you worry about that with your children?
Yes, and we worried about it because it's not a healthy place for children. No. It really isn't.
You said once that it's impossible to go through life in a fairy tale. The downs come and you have to steel yourself. And I'm imagining there that you were talking about your daughter, Katya, who was born in 1968. And she died of an overdose when she was 33.
33, yes.
I imagine that hit your family very hard indeed, and I imagine it's still something you live with daily, is it?
Well, it was New Year's Eve when she died, and they called us New Year's Day first thing in the morning. Probably the hardest thing I've had to tackle. I had to get back to work as quickly as possible because otherwise you were left there with thoughts of this beautiful child. Katya had a wonderful opportunity of being one of those made Hollywood stars,
okay,
kind of thing.
Right.
She had the looks. She was intelligent. But she got into the drug habit, and each time that an opportunity came up, she literally shot herself in the foot, which was very, very saddening, and you expected something worse to happen, and it did, unfortunately.
Time for some more music, Vidal. Disc number 6.
Well, I got threatened by a very beautiful lady, Ronnie, who said, if you don't play Brian Ferries the way you look tonight, we won't be speaking this evening. We dined with him once, and delightful man.
Yeah. Sunday, when I'm awfully low, when the world is cold, I will feel a glow just thinking of you and the way you look tonight. Your love with your smile so warm and your cheeks so soft, there is nothing for me but to love you just the way you look tonight.
That was Brian Ferry and The Way You Look Tonight, and that was for your wife, Ronnie. You've done well by her there. I want to ask you about the other woman in your life then, Vidal Sassoon, and that is your mother, Betty, who lived to the ripe old age of 97, was
97.
It? Yes, and she lived the last 20 years of her life in Los Angeles.
I brought her to Los Angeles. I wanted to have some of the things she'd never had.
Yes, it's a long way, Petticoat Lane to Rodeo Drive.
To Rodeo Drive.
How did she live in Los Angeles?
Well, she had her own flat in Century City and her own car and a driver.
How did she take to life in L.A.?
Well, she rather grew 6 inches, you know, and she wore white gloves when she went out and the hat. I thought she was the Queen Mum. She looked like her, actually.
Right. Did you talk to your mother before she died about the journey you'd made?
Yeah, she was always talking about it, but she always said your brother was the clever one. He used to come first, second or third in school. You know, that was my mum.
Let's have some more music then. We're on our 7th track today, Vidal Sassoon. Tell me what it is.
Oh, I think you'll like this one.
Okay.
Although we're playing Marla's 8th, it was Marla's 6th, Los Angeles, and I got to know him. You know, Simon Rattle, that is, you know, through Zubin. Zubin was an old friend from way back.
This is Zubin Mehta.
Zubin Mehta, I'm sorry, yes. I'm sorry to throw names around.
I'm enjoying it.
Okay. And he said, well, come to a concert. The fascinating thing was he hadn't hired a big car. A friend brought him with all his stuff, you know, the tails, the whole bit. And I said, I booked a restaurant, you know. And he said, no, Dizzy Gillespie is playing down the road. He said, can I leave my gear in your car? I said, sure. We dropped him off. We had the tails in the back of the car. And I got a call saying, could you be at the airport at 10 o'clock tomorrow morning?
Need the tails back.
I need the tails back, yes. But very special guy. Marvelous personality.
That was part of Mahler's Eighth Symphony with the City of Birmingham Symphony Orchestra, with John Villiers and the City of Birmingham Symphony Chorus and Youth Chorus and the London Symphony Chorus and the Toronto Children's Chorus, all conducted by Sir Simon Rattle. I'm imagining you did have his tails on for that one, Vidal Sassoon.
He did, yeah.
You yourself live in some LA. Splendor in the hills of
yeah.
L.A.
Two of the children, grandchildren, live in L.A., which is right. Nice, yeah.
Vidal Sassoon, you're 83 now.
Yes.
Still practising yoga?
Well, stretching.
Mm.
It gets harder because things start to fall apart and you have no control over them, you know, they just do. So you just have to try that little bit harder, yeah.
You had a quadruple heart bypass in your early 70s.
Yes.
You were 70.
Yes.
You seem very engaged in life. Do you feel you're 83 years, or does it come as a surprise to you when people say you're 83?
I was lying in hospital with pneumonia. They kept me in for 3.5 weeks, and a couple of days was a bit dodgy. And I woke up one night smiling, I swear. And I thought, I've had the best adventure you could possibly have for a kid that started from nowhere. And you've been very, very lucky. So if you have to go now, I'm ready. Really, that's the way I felt. I have no problems about being here or not being here.
I'm going to maroon you, Vidal Sassoon, to, yeah. As you know, a desert island now. You will be on your own, no family gathered round.
Yeah.
How will you handle life on your own?
I've got a reading room at home where I just go in it, get a book, write some notes. I've always written. I think one has to be autodidactic, because if you don't get an education, then educate yourself, you know.
Right.
I'm a loner very often.
Let's have our final piece of music then, Vidal Sassoon.
This is special in a way. The Count Basie Orchestra with Count Basie. I walk into the Beverly Wilshire Hotel. It's my 50th birthday, and there's Count Basie on stage.
Wow.
Playing piano with that whole marvellous band. And last year, I saw him at Ronnie Scott's, and I went back and met the band again, and they said, hey, can we do another gig in L.A.? I said, maybe on my 100th.
That was the Count Basie Orchestra and April in Paris. So, Vidal Sassoon, it's book time. I'm going to give you the Bible and the complete works of Shakespeare. And you can take a book. What book would you like to take?
Dostoevsky's The Brothers Karamazov.
Right, that's yours. I shall give you that. And we do allow you a luxury as well to make life just a little bit nicer. What luxury would you like to take?
Good Lord. dozen bottles of Vidal Sassoon shampoo.
I will allow you more than a dozen bottles. I'll give you a couple of cases. And if I were to force you just to save one disc from the waves, which one disc would you run to save?
It would have to be Mahler's Eighth.
Okay.
Yeah.
The Mahler is yours. Vidal Sassoon, thank you very much for letting us hear your Desert Island Discs.
Can I say that I've enjoyed this so much?
You've been listening to a download from the BBC. You'll find more information on the Radio 4 website, bbc.co.uk/radio4.